I'm sure you, like me, probably enjoy gazing out on beautiful landscapes, amazing panoramas. I certainly love watching sunrises and sunsets. This is a beautiful sunrise taken from the top of a volcano in New Zealand a few years ago. And this is the early morning sun in Scotland, proving that the sun really does shine in Scotland in the summer. And here are a few more. It just captures something of creation and the wonder of creation. This is Cheshire, again, early morning, beautiful English rolling countryside just a few weeks ago. And so on. And I also like to admire the minute detail in creation. The detail in a sunflower, or the busyness of a bumblebee, or even a butterfly having a snack. And I enjoy capturing some of that in photography. But the thing with photography is you capture something of the element of it, but you don't capture the full picture. You get a little bit of the perspective, but you don't get the whole thing. And sometimes we're a bit like that with Bible stories too. We read Bible stories, maybe we know them very well, and there are maybe missing details, and we fill in what we think we know. We make assumptions. So we've got to be wary of that. There's actually a lot more in the Bible, and even in these stories, and in the readings that we're going to hear shortly, than perhaps we realise. So when you listen to these readings shortly, whether it's the first time or the 100th time you've heard the story of Jonah, can I ask you to pay careful and close attention? And just bringing us back to Jonah, there was a guy a few weeks ago called Chase Decker who took probably his photo of a lifetime. Some of you may have seen it before. It's a humpback whale swallowing a sea lion. You might be wondering, well, what happens next? Well, if you don't know, I'll tell you a bit later. But this brings us back to the core of the story, Jonah and the big fish. So here we are, Jonah in the belly of a big fish, possibly a whale. But let's recap, just in case you weren't here last week, or just in case you're not familiar with the story. Now, the book of Jonah is one of the shortest books in the Old Testament. Scholars refer to Jonah as a minor prophet, but that's more about the size of the book, just four short chapters, than about his significance. And the book of Jonah is not to be underestimated. I really commend it to you. To read and reflect, it's got a great deal to say to us, especially today. Jonah was a prophet. He was a holy man. He was a man who walked with God, a man who received messages from God. And he lived in the northern kingdom. Now, if you don't know, after the king of Solomon, the Israelite nation split into two, the north and the south. And Jonah lived in the northern kingdom in the early part of the 8th century BC. And he's referenced elsewhere in the Old Testament. Jesus also referred to Jonah. He said, "This generation won't receive any sign except the sign of Jonah." And the sign of Jonah was about the 3 days that Jonah spent in the whale, or the big fish. Jesus spent 3 days in the tomb. That was a prophecy, and he used Jonah as that prophecy. But Jonah seems to be a very troubled man, perhaps a bitter man. He doesn't want to offer the message of God to the Assyrians. Perhaps he wants them to be judged, to be punished. So what happened? Well, as Ken recounted to us, Jonah was called by God to go and preach to the Assyrians in Nineveh, who just happened to be hated enemies. And, well, did he obey? Nope. He certainly didn't. He ran away, sailing in the opposite direction as far as he could, to Tarshish, which was somewhere in the west. Some think it might be Spain. I think it's more likely Sardinia for a whole host of reasons. But he sailed a long way away. And the ship that Jonah was in was subjected to a violent storm, so much so that it terrified the sailors. And they all prayed to whoever their God was. Jonah told the sailors that he was the cause of the storm and they should throw him into the sea. So they did so. And a big fish swallowed Jonah. And chapter 2 that we're looking at today is Jonah's prayer while in the belly of the fish. But before we do that, I want to address the elephant in the room, or should that be the big fish or the whale in the story? See, we jokingly subtitled this series, Jonah, a Fishy Tale. But is it? Is this story real? Well, Jeremy touched on this last week, and he reminded us that this isn't just an allegory. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a religious myth. So I'm changing today's subtitle. And I'm going to give you the punchlines now. It's certainly not a fishy tale. It's an account that teaches us about God. It challenges us about how we think about God. And it also tells us of undeserved grace. But since few miracles have attracted as much discussion and debate as this, I think it's worth briefly revisiting the question. Is this story real? There are a number of accounts and articles about people surviving being swallowed by a whale or a big fish, or even whether it's possible. And you can find those by doing internet searches. But actually, that's not my focus. I want to look at the question underlying the question. If we are asking whether this story is real, whether someone can actually survive in a fish, we're giving an indication of what we think about God. An indication of what we believe God can do. Miracles are not an everyday occurrence. I think we all know that. The Bible records miracles because they're extraordinary. They are supernatural. And they're signs of God's power. They teach us, but they're not the norm. And there are vast swathes of the Bible that don't record any miracles at all. So, who is your God? Who do you worship? Can your God do miracles? The God of the Bible, the God I worship, can and does. And providing the right conditions for Jonah to survive in the belly of a big fish is not beyond God. But who is your God? If you're asking the question, is this real? Is your God the God of the Enlightenment or the God of the 19th century philosophers, defined according to human experience and rationalism? Or is your God one that you could rationalize alongside the world wars and genocides and tragedies of the 20th century? Or is your God the God of the self-defining pick-and-mix postmodern generation, where it often seems that my image and my choice is most important? Is your God your reason? Have you fallen in with the new atheists and their very human-centered and leap-of-faith arguments? Because be under no illusion, science does not disprove God. And the arguments of the new atheists take great big jumping off points great big leaps of faith into their opinions, into their views. There's nothing logical about it. Or is your God just a small, me God? A reflection of yourself, of your own thoughts and feelings. And that's a challenge to all of us. Too often, we try to define God according to our understanding, our definitions, rather than his revelation. You see, if you've got a distorted view of God, you'll have a distorted view of life. Who do you worship? I put it to you that if your God can't rescue someone with a big fish, then he's not the God of the Bible. He's not worthy of worship, and you've got a serious issue with how you think about God. You're falling into what I call the folly of Jonah. You might well ask, well, what's the folly of Jonah? Well, it's simply that Jonah's view of God was seriously shaped and limited by his culture and by his definitions, as well as by his theology. Firstly, Jonah's view of God was limited by geography. Otherwise, he wouldn't have fled. He wouldn't have tried to run away. The ancients often had a view that their deity was a god of the plains, or a god of the forests, or a god of the mountains, or a god of a particular region. And quite often when they went into battle, it wasn't just tribe against tribe, it was that tribal god against the next tribal god. Who's got the most power in that area? Now, Jonah must have had a similar view, even at an unconscious level. Otherwise, why would he have tried to run away? But he found that no matter how far he ran, he couldn't escape God. And that's true of us too. How often do we think we can run or even try to run? But he's the God of all, and we can't run and we can't hide. And secondly, as we'll see later in the book, Jonah also thinks the Assyrians don't deserve God's forgiveness. He almost seems to resent that God should love other nations, especially the hated, cruel Assyrians. Now, we don't know why Jonah was so against the mission from God, but perhaps it's because he's heard of the reputation of the Assyrians, or maybe he even knows people who've been affected, who've been imprisoned or killed by the Assyrians, and that might go some way to explaining his reaction. It could be a very human one. But Jonah dislikes the Assyrians, and the book of Jonah shows the struggle between what God calls Jonah to do and what Jonah really wants to do. How often is that our struggle? And thirdly, Jonah's attitude to the Assyrians is probably also a theological one. He perhaps has a view that only Israel is favoured by God. And there's a strong theme of this that runs through the Old Testament, a strong theme of exclusivism and nationalism. And this is challenged right here in the book of Jonah. And Jonah also challenges any exclusivism that we might harbour. It challenges the narrow nationalistic concerns that are becoming ever more prevalent today. It challenges the language that world leaders are using. And it challenges our inaction. God is concerned for all people and longs to share his compassion. Jonah struggles with that. Do we? What Jonah discovers through his experiences is that God is bigger than he realizes, and that God's concern and God's compassion are wider than he realizes.
but he doesn't like it.
And so now, having fled and been thrown overboard and swallowed by a big fish, we've got his prayer in the whale. Oh, and by the way, is anyone still wondering what happened to the sea lion? Well, it almost certainly got spat out and swam away. A humpback whale couldn't eat a sea lion. Humpbacks are filter feeders that feed on plankton and krill and small fish. There are other types of whale and big fish, though, that could swallow a sea lion or a person. But in this case, the sea lion was the one that got away. So back to Jonah and his prayer. And it's not a prayer of, save me. It's a prayer of acknowledgement, a prayer of dawning realization, of gratitude, and of willingness to obey. Now, as we read in chapter 1, Jonah thought he deserved to die, but he was saved by a big fish. And Jonah saw God's hand in him being hurled into the sea. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas. And he describes the anguish of sinking down, of falling away from God, the growing distance as he fled from God, surrounded by the deep, being pulled down by seaweed, captured, trapped, imprisoned. And at this desperate point, perhaps his last breath as he sank down in the waters, he looked to God. He stopped running. He stopped fleeing. He prayed to God, and God answered him. Jonah acknowledged that God rescued him from the depths of the sea, but possibly also the depths of the thinking of his heart. Is he reflecting on his attitude? Perhaps even reflecting that he's been very down. He's certainly bitter and hateful towards the Assyrians. And there's some suggestion later in the book in his attitude that he might be deeply unhappy, maybe even depressed. Whatever it is, Jonah still has struggles of the mind and heart, as we'll see later on. And even his acknowledgement of God as Saviour and obedience to God's message doesn't actually melt his heart and compassion to the Assyrians. Nevertheless, God saved Jonah with a big fish. And the saving goes beyond just the physical act of rescue. There's a wholeness, there's a relief of heart and mind in this prayer. But you, Lord, my God, brought my life up from the pit. God saved Jonah, even though he was rebellious and disobedient. So this grumpy, embittered, despairing, perhaps deeply pained, disobedient holy man is nonetheless loved, still wanted, and still commissioned. And that gives hope to people like me. And it should give hope to you too. You see, Jonah receives unmerited grace, undeserved rescue. The same grace offered to the Assyrians if they'll turn away from their wickedness. Jonah receives the same grace he's been asked to take to his enemies. And it's the same love and undeserved grace offer to the world in and through Jesus. It's the same grace offered to you and me. And just to be clear, this is not God saying about the Assyrians that he accepts their wickedness, but it's actually an offering of acceptance if they will turn to him. The compassion is if they'll turn to him. Jonah couldn't run from God, and Jonah couldn't save himself. There's a struggle of faith and obedience. But God's plan of salvation wins. Jonah ends his prayer with the powerful acknowledgement that salvation comes from the Lord and that he will say it, he will share it, he will obey. Now, this account of Jonah is in many ways uncomfortable, even shocking. It's shocking because of a holy man's disobedience. It's shocking because it's a message of hope to the Assyrians. Assyrian enemies who would shortly, historically, destroy the northern kingdom and take the 10 tribes of Israel into exile. So if you're wondering where the phrase the 10 lost tribes come from, it's because they were taken into exile and they intermarried and merged with the Assyrian culture. It's shocking because it cuts against the grain of God being just a God of the Israelites. It's shocking because it cuts against the nationalism of the time and our time. It's shocking because it offers a different view, a different approach in an unsettled time, in a time of crisis. Not just the human way, God's way. It speaks powerfully to us today. When there's so much nationalism being espoused, when there's so much hatred, when there's so much prejudice, it calls us to proclaim God's concerns, not to follow the cultural concerns. It's countercultural. It's even counter-theological. Jonah struggled with what he'd been asked to do because it didn't fit his view of God. It didn't fit his theology. But God prevails. God saves Jonah. God desires to save others. Not just the Israelites. Not just you and me. This story shouts out God's plan, God's love, God's compassion, God's second chance. And the story of Jonah cuts across normal human values. It cuts across the, you're my friend, so I'll be your friend. It embodies Jesus' command to love our enemies. Jonah knew how difficult that was, and I'm sure we all know how difficult it is. It presents a challenge to our narrow focus, our narrow local and national concerns. God's concerns are wider. Who do we speak out for? Who do we welcome? People just like us? Or do we follow Jesus and regard anyone as our neighbour, other people as created in the image of God? The story presents a challenge to how we think about God, about the limits we might put on God, about our desire to make God in our image and the shape of our culture, rather than realising we are part of his creation and made in his image. And it presents a challenge to our mission and sometimes to our lack of it. It also raises questions for us personally. Where are you in this story? Are you afflicted with a small view of God? Does this story challenge how you think about God? Do you have a small view of God that distorts how you live? Are you perhaps even subconsciously trying to run and hide from God? Are there people that we think are undeserving of grace? And might we be surprised at who God loves and wants us to call back to him? Are you aware of the expansiveness of God's mercy? Have you conceded? And are you acknowledging God and even obeying his call on your life? See, God can use us even when we're embittered, even when we're rebellious and disobedient like Jonah. But how much more enjoyable to walk with God and rejoice with his grace rather than languish in misery and resentment. God's grace is for each one of us. How much do we really know it? How much do we really live in it? Or do we, like Jonah, try to run from God, run from his unmerited grace? Well, if you don't know this grace, or if you've even kind of forgotten it, taken it for granted, as it's so easy for us to do, then can I encourage you today? Today, this time, reach out to God, rediscover the expansiveness of God's grace, the depths and breadth of God's love for you. Turn to him and know his acceptance. The book of Jonah is not a fishy tale. It's about God's unmerited, undeserved, unstoppable grace. Grace that we're invited not just to receive, but to enjoy and to share and also to be part of God's story. There's a lot to think about in this story. And so we're going to take just a few minutes now, rather than just sort of scurrying off into the day and maybe forgetting. We're going to take 3 or 4 minutes just to reflect, to pray, to think. Alone, or ones, twos, threes, as you wish, before we continue the service.